Michigan Radio. When you think of inequality in higher education, things like tuition, maybe the price of books and food probably comes to mind. But what about inequality when it comes to the party scene in college? A new 5-year study found that if a young woman chooses the so-called party path rather than, you know, rigorous studying, and if she's from a working class or low-income family, that party path may not lead her to the great college experience or a promising career. The research was done by sociologist Elizabeth Armstrong of the University of Michigan and Laura Hamilton of the University of California, Merced. They've turned the research into a book, Paying for the Party: How College Maintains Inequality. Cynthia recently spoke with Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Armstrong, so good to have you on Stateside.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you and Laura had a dorm room at what you call a big Midwest university. You don't identify it, but give us a thumbnail sketch of this Midwest university.
Well, there's schools that sometimes make the top lists for party schools. This was one of those schools, a school that in the last 10 years or so had hit it pretty close to the top of this list. This is a school with big time sports, a large, vibrant Greek system, and a school that where there's a certain set of students who select the school because of its social life. When they're going around looking at colleges with their parents, they're looking for fun.
Well, you started out with the idea of studying college student social life, meaning?
Well, we started interested in sex. Mm-hmm. We were interested in hooking up, relationships, sexual assault, drinking, and all of the kinds of kind of peer culture dynamics that kind of surround these activities.
And what made you shift your focus to social class?
Well, it was really being on the residence hall floor that led us to shift the focus. We still ended up writing a number of papers about sexuality. But when we got on the floor and we started to realize that women who didn't have much money were pretty much socially excluded from cliques and social groups on the floor. And so then we started really realizing that these social patterns had serious implications. Like one of the young women who lived across the floor from us, who was kind of lower middle class, very excluded, she said, well, you know, I have all of this time because I have no friends. No one will interact with me. So I should be able to do well in my classes. But I'm so depressed. I just can't bring myself to do anything. So
she didn't even get asked to be aboard the party train.
Oh, no. So the party pathway was exclusive. Mm-hmm. So some of the women from less economically advantaged backgrounds kind of tried to kind of get on board. Mm-hmm. And some of them kind of managed to participate a little bit. For example, we had some kind of working class girls on the floor who were very social and extroverted, who kind of made it into the kind of party clique on the floor. But when the kind of rich girls on the floor started getting into sororities and they didn't, then they were just really devastated because as they were kind of kicked out of the clique at that point and then kind of realized that the wealthy girls who were just kind of using them as kind of convenience friends until they made their real friends in the houses that they joined. And so they were pretty much kicked to the curb and ended up just basically rooming with each other in an apartment off campus the next year. I mean, they'd known each other before school. Mm. They came and they made these fake friends while in the dorm, made no real friends, and moved out and lived with each other the year after. And then eventually left the university, as did most of the less affluent women.
That's what I want to see. So take us out. You were kind of examining this group for a period of how long?
For 5 years. Mm. So we followed them from like the day they moved their stuff onto the dorm floor until after they should have graduated. Not all of them did, but we followed them. So the ones who left the university, we followed them as well. We followed them to the regional campuses that they moved to. We interviewed them back home when they moved back home with their parents after graduation. Laura followed them to the big city, the wealthy women to the big cities where they moved to. So she was able to see kind of their, you know, their families, their houses, their new apartments, their whole lives.
I'm speaking with University of Michigan sociologist Elizabeth Armstrong, along with her colleague Laura Hamilton, who's with the University of California, Merced. They actually had a room at a dormitory in what they call Midwestern University, a party university, very typical of what we find all across America. And they took a look at what impact the party path had on the girls who were attending. And as you found out, if the girls were from a lower class or lower working class or lower income family, it was a much tougher way to fit in than the girls from the more affluent. So did being on the party path slow down the kids from the more affluent families?
Not the wealthiest ones.
Okay.
Young women from upper class families. And by that we mean that they had fathers who were chief financial officers of major corporations, fathers who owned relatively large size businesses. Mm-hmm. These were families where the mom was out of the labor market, and basically they were had a very kind of traditional family structure, and basically money was not a relevant consideration. These young women, these were the ones whose parents basically understood that they were purchasing a social experience for their daughters. They came, they immediately joined sororities, they were interested in clothes, and they majored in a set of majors that we basically call easy majors or light majors.
For instance,
communications, tourism, apparel merchandising. Unfortunately, like all of the education majors ended up falling into this category as well. A lot of them were sort of some variety of kind of a business school light major. At this school, the admission to the business school was quite competitive, and so the women who ended up not being able to get in or not wanting to take exams on Friday and Saturday as the business school required, they took other sort of majors that sort of promised to be kind of similar to that, but that didn't have quite the same.
Did you say business school light?
Yeah.
So they tended to go in, I'm sure not all of them, but tended to go into easier majors. Still could enjoy the party thing, which would include Greek life and all the sports and all the...
Yeah, and they went out a lot. So the women who were sort of the most, the socialites that we called them, mm-hmm. they went out 3-4 sometimes a week, sometimes even more often. The social life was where the kind of real work of college mm-hmm. happened, because that's where you would see and be seen, where you would accumulate status, where you fit into the whole sort of kind of hierarchy of the social scene was kind of worked out. So for the wealthiest women, they could do this the whole 4 years, but then after graduation, they did just fine because their parents paid rent on expensive kind of apartments in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles. Their parents or other family members had connections in kind of glamour industries, we call them, the sort of in sports, media, fashion, kind of advertising. And their parents had often also worked with them to make sure they were doing really kind of high quality internships while they were in school. So while they weren't doing a lot academically in their classes, often during the summers, their parents were putting them up in New York or Chicago and basically funding them.
And they didn't have to work.
Unpaid internships.
Yeah. They didn't have to get the summer job to help pay for school the following fall.
No, they didn't need the summer job. Mm-hmm. There was pretty much no possible way to hold a job during the academic year, given the sort of demands of the social calendars that these women had.
So the more affluent girls seems like they got out of school on time.
They did. They all graduated on time, yeah. And they ended up either with decent jobs that their parents helped find for them, or it didn't actually really matter whether they were employed or not.
So take us to the working class or lower income girls.
Yeah. Well, there's really at least two different sets. It's like, for example, the women most similar to the socialites who actually really participated heavily in the party scene but came from not quite as much wealth were the wannabes. Mm. So these were kind of middle class girls who had enough kind of wherewithal that they could kind of party hard while they were in college. But one of them told us afterwards when she moved back in with her parents after graduation, nobody told me Disneyland was going to end. So she kind of thought that the kind of fast-paced social life of college would just continue. She hadn't had a very good discussion with her parents. Her parents were expecting her to graduate with actual skills that she could get a job. But she was partying with these women whose parents didn't have those expectations for them. And so there was a lot of kind of confusion. And this was quite common, that there was particularly for these kind of wannabe girls, that they were kind of looking to these very, very, very affluent women for kind of models of how to live in college. But their parents didn't quite understand, and they didn't quite understand that they weren't going to have the resources to continue this.
And then you found from the lower income family, the real working class family, most of them didn't get out in the 4 years?
No. The least affluent women, the women from working class families, and by that mean that their moms were doing child care, mm-hmm. or their dad was maybe kind of an electrical lineman or mm-hmm. something like that, whose parents hadn't attended college themselves. These women were just blown away by this scene. Like this one of the roommate duos was a woman whose dad was the chief financial officer of a corporation. And her father was an electrical lineman. These women had nothing in common. They didn't even know why they didn't get along. They just didn't get along. And they were both lovely, really sweet, nice young women. The class chasm was just huge. There was not one cross-class roommate relationship that even survived the year. Mm. In all cases, the more affluent woman moved out and found another roommate, and basically, or else the less affluent woman left campus before the end of the year, even. So the working class women, they tended to leave the university once they really realized that the university was not set up to serve them well socially or academically. These were very, very resilient. They were the very, very highest achieving young women from their small, teeny little itty bitty rural towns. So they were quite resilient, able to overcome obstacles, bright. These were not like shrinking violets. These were people who were determined to get ahead. And so most of them, when they realized that this school was not set up to meet their needs, just said, okay, I'm out of mm-hmm. here. And they transferred to regional schools where they found that there weren't the social distractions. The courses were actually better taught, smaller. They got more attention. They liked it. They could just drive their car and park and go to class all day and be done with it. And that other people around were just like them.
Do you think these findings might apply equally to male students?
Yes, we think that they probably do. We think that it's possible. It's a kind of unfortunate that we couldn't study men as as much depth.
Sure.
But we think that it's possible that men are even more sucked into the party pathway. Like at this particular university, there are more fraternities than there are sororities. And there's less of a cost for men in the sense that for women getting very highly involved in the social scene, there's reputational risks of being called a slut, mm-hmm. potentially, and there's risks of sexual assault. There's this edge to it, edge of kind of how do you navigate this world safely that isn't quite as much of a problem for the men. And so the men are kind of just like, in terms of encouraging men to rush, it's basically like, you're going to basically get to drink all the time and interact with all these really hot young women. Mm. What's not to like? Mm-hmm. And we know that young men now are achieving less academically. They're less likely to have good grades graduating from high school. They're less likely to make it to college to begin with. And they do less well when they're in college and graduate at lower rates. So it's possible that this is even more of a problem for them. I mean, it's certainly not, they're not exempt from it at all.
Elizabeth, what message do you think your research has for those working class families, the lower income and the working class families? Because right now, kids are either on college tours. The juniors are doing that this time of the year, and the seniors are looking for their acceptance letters. What message does it have as far as what questions they should be asking when choosing a college or university?
Really pay attention to fit. Pay attention to whether this particular school is set up to serve this particular student. But I think another big factor in this is the issue of debt and what it's going to cost, because there's still, I think, among some Americans, this notion that a college degree is a college degree is a college degree, and no matter how much you have to go in debt in order to get it, that it will still pay off.
Right.
The research shows that yes, a college degree really matters, but it's which college degree from where. An engineering degree from MIT is going to have a different kind of economic payoff than a teaching credential from, you know,
or the generic communications degree.
Right, the communications degree from, you know, some sort of middle tier public. Mm. It just is, and so the amount of debt that's reasonable to incur depends on these things. And one of the things we thought about is that college is really a kind of an opportunity space, mm-hmm. and it's a space where you have to basically take advantage of it, and it's not just in the classroom, it's with the extracurriculars.
Now, you've said one of your main concerns is that someone mm-hmm. reads your book and says, "See, higher ed in this country is horrible, we should stop funding it." So what message do you want people and schools to take away from your book?
Yeah, well, I guess we talked a little bit about the parents, but in terms of the more general policy implication, if our kind of federal government and our state governments continue to fund higher education at low levels, this is going to make it increasingly a world that serves the socialites and sort of supports the party pathway, because the universities basically end up in a situation where they're trying to chase tuition revenue dollars and building climbing gyms and kind of creating this like massive social infrastructure. It's a way to get that money. Educating the students that are the mobility pathway students, the sort of less affluent students, mm-hmm. it's expensive. That's where you need really good advising. That's where you need to have great instructors. You need to have ratios of kind of student to faculty that are low. You need to actually put in the money to really actually do the work of educating. And if our society doesn't really view educating people as a public good, that we're building citizens that are going to contribute generally to our society, and doesn't make it possible for us to do that, then it will be a consumption product for the rich.
And college will maintain the inequality.
Yeah.
Sociologist Elizabeth Armstrong is with the University of Michigan, and along with Laura Hamilton of the University of California, Merced, she's co-author of Paying for the Party, How College Maintains Inequality. A lot to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on Stateside.
Thank you for having me here.